Okay. Peter, recovered alcoholic.
Hey, Peter.
Okay. As we clean up amends, actively clean up amends, we begin to enter the world of the Spirit. My book says, on page 84, this thought brings us to step 10. The thought they're talking about is that these promises will materialize if we work for them. So as I'm cleaning up amends, seeking out people, even though I haven't gotten to them yet, I'm actively doing this. It brings us to the door of step 10. And there's some things that happen in step 10 that are really incredible promises. It says we've entered the world of the Spirit. So by the time we get to step 10, and certainly in step 10, we've had this spiritual awakening. Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Had the spiritual awakening. Step 12, when we read step 12, it talks about working with others in the book. They don't talk about the spiritual awakening there because we've had it. So guaranteed, a book promises us by the time we get to step 10, certainly in step 10, it says we've entered the world of the Spirit. And we have a page and a third, page and a half on step 10. But if we go through step 10, you'll see incredible promises that we are going to experience. And it gives me some instructions on what to do as I navigate through my day. It's constant inventory, constantly pruning the tree over and over and over again, constant amends. When we look at the questions in four-step inventory, we look at the questions in 10 and 11 reviews, they all look the same. It's about uncovering, discovering, and discarding the things in me which are blocking me from God, so I can be of maximum service to God and those around me. It's not about making me some superhero. It's just about getting me to be a really good spoke of many in this big wheel, to be of service to others. This thought brings us to step 10, which suggests we continue. You'll see words like continue next, at once, action words. Marion said earlier, the only time you'll hear a time frame is after step 5, that's 1 hour. But the book is constantly having us move. You ever see a duck on a pond that just kind of gliding over the lake? But if you look underneath, they're paddling, they're moving, they're working, which is what we're doing. Mm-hmm. We continue to take personal inventory and continue to set right any new mistakes as we go along. We're going to see 4 through 9 here regularly. I vigorously commenced this way of living. I'm making a commitment to do this for the rest of my life. It's a way of life now. I'm willing to be disciplined to a spiritual life. By being honest, by being open, by continuing to be willing and to be disciplined to this way of living. Now what happens here is the road gets very narrow and the archway gets even smaller. We can't go through that door with a lot of stuff. Scripture talks about this. The narrow gate and the narrow road, entering the world of the Spirit. I can't take me and 400 defects through that gate. I can only take me in the raw into the world of the Spirit. Attachments will kill me. I can't take me and all my attachments into the world of the Spirit. So as I'm cleaning up amends and willing to clean up any amends that I haven't made yet, but I'm seeking these folks out, something happens. We've entered the world of the Spirit. It says, once I enter the world of the Spirit, it doesn't say hang out for 90 days. It says next, my next function, next thing to do is to grow an understanding and effectiveness. So the question is, we take a statement and flip it into a question. What am I currently doing to grow in understanding and effectiveness? I continue to watch. One of my sponsors had us work with words like turn, watch, aware, and observe. Turn in order to go out. Turn into this power in order to go out. If I don't turn in, I will go without. but if I stay in there too long, you better look out. And what happens is we start to worship the methodology, we start to worship ourselves, which means why I say you better look out, because now I'm dangerous again. I'm my own idol. So we go in order to go out, but our job is going in to go out to be of service to others. It's less about me. The mind would have me rather be ruined than change. There's a book I'm working with, and the question is, if the price to know God, to experience God, to walk with the Lord, if the price tag for that was to not get respect or notoriety from anyone ever again, would you do that walk? See, what happens is we get God and we talk about it. And I get the big book and I talk about it, all good. But what I want, the ego wants, is a little attaboy and some notoriety and respect. I am somebody. And the question is, can I do this life in the middle of God, if you will, seeing the all of God in everything, but the price is to be unknown and not respected. Not disrespect where people mock you all day long. All that might happen to anyone who walks with God, especially nowadays. But just some guy, some woman, they're gonna pay attention to you. Would you take that? Would you take that deal? There was a time I would think about it. I'd push back on it. And I said from a million podiums, there might come a time where God says, no more speaking. Just sit in the back of the room, be an elder, and watch and help. No more speaking. Would I be okay with that? Yeah. I love getting to talk about this stuff. It's fun. I shout about God from the rooftop. But how do I know God might not pull the plug on this tomorrow morning? If I'm attached to doing this, and I know a lot of cats out there who do this, you don't want to even have a cup of coffee with them. I know a lot of folks who do this, and they're shining examples of Alcoholics Anonymous and God. But if I'm attached to this, I speak for myself, I'm in deep water. If my recovery hinges on the next talk I do, I'm in deep, deep water. My recovery hinges on my relationship with God, working with others, and God. When I lose that, I get drunk. This is something God gave me some favor to do. Not do me a favor, but favor. At the same time, if you ask me to balance your checkbook, you will be broke tomorrow because I can't do that. See those pictures on the wall? I didn't put them up, because if you put them up, they'd be crooked, there'd be holes in the wall. I'm useless. There's a lot of things I can't do.
True.
Some people are like, I forget who I was speaking to. I think he was here before. An accountant. An accountant. I can't even count to 10 without having a group conscious meeting. I mean, numbers and things like this. Certain things I can't do. What I do for a living, God gave me some favor. I didn't go to college. Never went to college. Well, I spent about 15 minutes in college and thought getting drunk was better than going to class. So I really don't have that kind of extended education. How I do what I do for a living is truly God's grace. It's favor. How I'm able to get in on someone from a therapeutic angle, pull them out and put them back together. How do you do that without any college education in that arena? But if that same client asks me, his car's not running, I can't help him, to hang a picture, to do something else, I'm not good. I know my limitations. So my next function is to grow in understanding and effectiveness. This is not an overnight matter. It should continue for my lifetime. I continue to watch for selfishness, dishonesty, resentment, and fear. It sounds a lot like the inventory questions, and we're going to see them again in step 11. It says, when these crop up, not if, but when they crop up, which means that I'm going to get a little selfish, dishonest, self-seeking. If I'm, it might show up from time to time. It might show up in bunches. I don't know. My job is to keep spiritually fit. And if these things do pop up, it tells me what to do with them. When they crop up, first move is always God. I go to God. Go to God at once to remove them. I discuss them with someone immediately, 4 and 5. And make amends quickly if I've harmed anyone. 9. So I'm writing this inventory or discussing this inventory. I'm seeing where I missed the mark. What defects are showing up? I'm looking at 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9. Now that we have one school of thought, folks go through the steps one time and live in 10, 11, and 12. And we have another school that says you go through the work regularly. I'm on both sides. I've lived on both sides of the fence. When I first came in here, my first sponsor, we went through the work one time, 10, 11, and 12, and stay there. Just do 10, 11, 12, 10, 11, 12, forever. And it worked for a little while. Somewhere around, I don't know, about 10 years, I'm doing this, and I hit a wall. I just got stagnant, and I couldn't understand why. And a little bit more fear was showing up, and a little bit more irritability was showing up, and I couldn't put my finger on it. And at the same time, my sponsor was not the same guy I met when we first started the relationship. And there was a gentleman who came up from Texas to do a fellowship of the Spirit in AA. And there was a lot of talk about this guy, and someone gave me a cassette tape of him. If anyone's under 30, we had cassette tapes back in the day, not CDs. And I heard albums are making a return, making a comeback. Albums are coming back, which is the coolest thing. But and I listened to this guy talk. And my first reaction was, what a pompous, arrogant, egotistical idiot. I put the tape in again. And I listened to it again, and I said, what a pompous, arrogant, I hate this guy, listened to it and put it in again. And I don't know when, but at some point I went, I love this man, I got to meet him. I got to meet this man. And he showed up at Fellowship of the Spirit in Queens, New York, and he showed up at a local group. In fact, the first time he showed up at a local group, I challenged him from the floor. I challenged him. But he showed up the second time, and he was doing a local meeting, and he was staying at a friend of mine's house. And I asked permission to go talk to him, and I sat with him. And I said, would you sponsor me? He said, I've been waiting for you. And he said, are you ready to have your life turned upside down? And I reluctantly agreed. And we began the work again. And we went through the work. One year I went through the work 3 times. And I was asking to go through it a 4th time. He said, stop now, you're worshiping methodology. The idea is to serve God. And I began this other thing of going through the steps at least once a year. And has been indeed miraculous. So when these crop up, we ask God to remove them. We discuss them with someone immediately, and we make amends quickly if we've harmed anyone. I turn my thoughts to someone I can help, and my code is love and tolerance of others. Now watch this. It says, we cease fighting anything or anyone, dash, even alcohol or the substance. Almost an afterthought. How does that statement meet me where I currently am? Say I'm not thinking about substances anymore. That's been removed. But how do I get that statement to meet me? Who am I wrestling with in my head when I'm sitting on the couch? What sort of doom and gloom is my mind creating? Replaying stuff that happened to me in the 3rd and 4th grade and I'm an adult now. Or do you ever do this? You're sitting, let's pretend you're sitting on your couch. It's a beautiful day. The kids are good. Your health is good. The relationship is good. The money's good. The car's good. The pool is good. Everything's good. And you go, wow, everything's good. And then the mind says, yeah, but. Pete, you're 58. How many years you got left? And remember what happened to you? That you should have more money by now. I know this house is nice, but you should have a big house. And you're going to run out of money. You get it? And I go from bliss to bleak like that. And now I go from smiling to like, I'm dead. I'm ruined. It's over. My life does not worth anything. Or I'm sitting on a couch and everything's really good and I love my home group and such and such, and all of a sudden I think of someone in my home group who challenges me during group business meetings and I stop that. And if he starts with me next time, I'm gonna, and I'm angry again. Or I'm replaying stuff from the past. The if only story shows up. So I'm still fighting people. Lots of times we speak when we cease to be at peace with our own thoughts. I need to talk and tell you how bad it is, or talk gossip about someone just to get you on my side, because I'm not at peace with myself. I've been able to be around, not often, a few times in my walk, with some very religious / spiritual people. Some of them don't say much unless you ask them a question. They'll greet you, they'll say hi, they're very, very great etiquette. But they rarely lead the conversation. They don't need to. They just wait for the invitation. So how do you meditate? Now they're going to talk. And sometimes the way they answer the question is with another question. They're at peace with their stuff in here. They don't need to sound good. They don't need to prove to anyone that they're okay. The guru doesn't need to prove he's a guru. You just know it. You just know it. You just look in their eyes and say, something's different about this person. We cease fighting anything or anyone, even alcohol. For by this time, sanity has returned. Back in step two, we talked about we're going to get to this place, this arrival, being restored to sanity. Step 10, they deliver the goods. Sanity, wholeness of mind, truth, the solution has been given to us. And when that happens, I'm not thinking drink, I'm not thinking drug, I'm not thinking of other things going on, sprees. That stuff's been removed. It all hinges on my spiritual muscles. The whole thing hinges on my relationship with God. Not talking about God only. Not claiming God with my lips. Faith without works is dead. Not reciting scripture, not reciting the book. My relationship with God. How do you have one of the key components to having a successful relationship is spending time with that person and sharing. Yes? If you're dating someone and they're never available for you, and when they are, they're not even concerned what you have to say, that's going to be a relationship that's not going to last. If there's dishonesty in it and infidelity, it's not going to last. But one of the things, obviously, love is that, is spending time with that person, wanting to spend time with that, transparency, your innermost self, here it is. That makes two people bond. We do it in AA, and we're not in really that kind of intimate relationship like a husband and wife would have. Right? There's men that I'm intimate with because they share with me and vice versa. That's why the relationships that we have in our fellowships usually last for the rest of our life, because we know each other like no one else does. And we walk each other through storms. We put people on our shoulders and we celebrate when they have children. We celebrate their successes. And most of us don't look for anything in return, because we all do good. When Mary gets her 1-year chip at her home group, the whole home group celebrates, because we did that walk with her. We remember when she came in and we put her on her shoulders, because we know she's going to put someone on her shoulders. We will be seldom interested in liquor. If tempted, I recoil from it as from a hot flame. I react sanely and normally. These are 10-step promises. We will see that our new attitude toward liquor has been given us without any thought or effort on our part. No thinking here. I don't have to think the drink through, play the tape to the end. It's been given to me without any thought or effort on my part. It just comes. This is the miracle of it. I haven't even sworn the stuff off, like I'm not drinking ever again, not drugging ever again. It says we've been placed in a position, neutrality, safe and protected. It says, instead, the problem has been removed. It does not exist for us. This is the place called recovered. It's no longer a problem. Once a drunk, always a drunk. But the problem's been removed. So then we ask ourselves a question, if I'm doing this for a while, leaving the drink aside, page 51 talks about this. They tell why living was so unsatisfactory. Okay, what other areas of my life that are driving me or causing me pain and suffering that are out of integrity are now back in integrity and not causing me pain and suffering because they've been removed? The sex stuff, the food stuff, the money stuff, the health stuff. Right? Not driving me anymore. My illness is no longer taking me underground on another spree. I'm really free now. This is what Marion was talking about earlier, the emotional sobriety thing. I knew a guy used to speak a lot, was a little community guru on the West Coast. He was physically not well. Really, really not well physically. And hadn't gone to a doctor in I don't know how long. And he had the means to go to a doctor. He was a businessman. Way overweight. And his legs were like purple from the diabetes stuff. I said, what's wrong with this picture? You're up there talking about the big book and God and inventory and spirituality. When was the last time you visited an MD to get a checkup or to address this issue? And your weight issue is out of control. What's the deal with this? Hip? Something wrong with that. My book is telling me if I'm following this, my life will get back to integrity again in all areas. Not that we're going to be rich or we're going to be, you know, Mr. Olympia, but the body's going to be taken care of. So I go to a doctor twice a year for checkups, and I go to a doctor when stuff is going on. I go to a dentist a couple of times a year. I try to take care of my body as best I can. Do I do a great job? Absolutely not. But I scratch and claw and chop wood and carry water, you know. Do well, I'm 58, so there's other doctors I got to go see at my age to make sure everything's working right and take care of this stuff. And dentists and things like that, you know. How are we doing with hygiene, you know? We clean up the meeting, make sure all the chairs are perfect, everything's cleaned up. How about inviting people into our home? What's our home look like, you know? This is all areas I was taught to take a look at. If I really want to, you know, be an example of godliness. Instead, the problem has been removed. It doesn't exist for us. The whole thing hinges on my relationship with God, and I got to be careful not to rest on my laurels because I'm headed for trouble if I do. So I take a look at how I'm doing throughout the day, make amends when I need to, and I bring this into prayer and meditation. In step 11 in the nightly review, I write nightly review at night. It's my inventory, and I share it with my sponsor. Monday nights at 7 o'clock, I'm on the phone with my sponsor. Any other time I need to speak to my sponsor, I call him. And we do this, Mary and I do this together. Mary was on the phone with her sponsor yesterday about some things and throughout the week, whether it's just sharing or writing, reading inventory, this is what we do with our 11th step. We write the inventory, we discuss it, solitary self-appraisal is insufficient. Mm-hmm. And again, I take a look at me and where I missed the mark for the day. Missed the mark. Mm-hmm. Sometimes the best thing I can give my God that day is surrendering my sin to him. Because he knows I'm not perfect. He created me. I go back to the manufacturer and say, something's wrong. He'll fix it. And I share with my sponsor. And when I speak to my sponsor, on Monday nights, I have my big book, I have my inventory book, I have my Bible, and a couple other books we work with that are in front of me. And he leads it. Whether it lasts an hour or longer, it's not my job to decide that. We do the work. And I have a life of prayer, I have a life of meditation in the morning and closing it at night. I usually pray and meditate. I always had this thing I do during the middle of the day, a little meditation practice, a religious practice. And so I still seek this God and listen and wait, and sometimes the meditation is just being still. And as I always say, go into darkness to see and silence to hear. And getting away from this mind. And wait for the teacher to show up. As I said earlier, I'm part of my religious community, and I'm a member of good standing in my church, as well as Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm a member of AA. And I do CA whenever I'm asked to do, and the calendar allows me. So it's been a thrill for me to do this with you guys. I will tell you, the practice of meditation, and I'm just going to turn it over to Marion here because we're running short on time. The practice of meditation has been soul food, food for the soul. It's incredible what happens to us when we have a life of meditation. We can meditate in our living room. We can meditate in our bedroom. We create a space, a sacred space that we go to with prayer and meditation. It's our godly place in the house. Something happens out of that. And it's like going to the gym. The first time you go to the gym and you work out, you see no results, but you feel a lot of pain. And why am I doing this for? I don't see any change. And somewhere down the road, you start to feel different. And when you step in the shower, you notice there's a difference. Mm-hmm. And somebody says to you, what have you been doing, man? You look good. What's going on? Oh, I've been working out for 6 months. This is the same thing. We're working out. I call it, we work out in the spiritual gym. That's this. Mm-hmm. And the chopping wood and carrying water is in part when no one's looking. I'm out there chopping wood, breaking a sweat, getting calluses, and carrying water. God carries his water in broken pots. That's us. We carry the water. We plow the field. No applause, no spotlight. We do it for the glory of God because I want to be a beggar in God's kingdom. Because I'm no better than that. Something happens. We operate on a different level of consciousness. Our point of view changes. With all my flawed brokenness, I'm not the poster child for recovery, trust me. There's a lot of cracks in this armor. And God sees fit to keep me moving. So, I share. I do what God has me to do. And sometimes you experience some resistance and some character assassination. And sometimes you're met with applause. Whatever it is, I do it for my God and I do it for my fellowship. Because without you, without my God, I'm on a run, I'm drunk, I'm in jail, or dead. That I know. Mm-hmm. So I thank you so much for listening, and I'm going to turn it over to Marion.
Okay, thanks. Thanks, Gil. I get to listen too and learn too as we go. It's so awesome. Thank you. Always continuing, you know, whether you're teaching, whether we're teaching, or we're always remaining a student. You know, so beautiful. And I know there's lots of new people in this room, and some of the basic stuff that was given to me first on is 86, 87, and 88 is how I can bookend my day. It's how I can start my day, and it's how I can finish my day. And regardless of where I am in the steps, I need to practice these two things in my life. I mean, it goes on. I'm starting my day with, and I was raising three little kids, and so my time for morning prayer was pretty condensed. And my big book sat on the back of my toilet, you know, and that was my time to close the door, and I could read on awakening, you know, because it's really beautiful. On awakening, let us think about the 24 hours ahead. We consider our plans for the day. Before we begin, we ask God to direct our thinking, especially that it be a divorce from self-pity, dishonest, or self-seeking motives. And you're, because of time's sake, I'm not going to read all the way through that. But if you read On Awakening from there to the end of the chapter, I did that repetitiously, on and on. I'm like, oh, the intuitive thought, you know, things that'll just come to us when we put this more, our life becomes more and more on a spiritual plane. It talks about that. So it's cool. And being able to end my day, you know, my mom always talked about, you know, not to go it's actually in the Bible, that about, you know, not going to bed with wrath, you know, not to go to bed with anger, not to go to bed with unfinished business, but to clean up my day and to do that stuff. And so that's the way I can bookend my day. I can start on awakening, going to God. I can close my day. And if there's something, somebody I need to text or call in the middle of, you know, and something's left on my heart, like, you know what, I was selfish. You know what, I owe an amends. Because I want to stay clean inside of here. I want to stay clean. And so the entire next chapter is on working with others. And I just want to, I was going to try to go to Dr. Bob. And we'll see if we can get there. But practical experience shows that nothing will so much as ensure immunity from drinking as intense work with other alcoholics. And, you know, our whole fellowship was born of the fact that, you know, Bill Wilson was out there. He was working with drunk after drunk after drunk after drunk, and nobody was getting sober. And he was so frustrated. And I always have this picture of him standing in the kitchen with Lois, and God bless Lois Wilson. I'll tell you what, because here he was. He was so beat up, and he was so discouraged. And as he stood there in the kitchen, in my picture, in my mind, that I always think of, and she looked at him, and she said, "Yeah, Bill." He's like, "No one's getting sober, no one's getting sober." And she said, "Yeah, Bill, but you are." And we get to be here today as a result of that conversation. I believe that, you know, that was a divine conversation. And so nothing ensures immunity from drinking, drugging as intensive work with other alcoholics. And it works when other things fail. I'll always take my girls to, you know, they'll be discouraged that one drunk isn't getting sober, or one addict isn't getting sober. Yeah, but you are. Who's, you know, when we have trouble in personal relationships, go work with a drunk. You know, if that one's not getting sober, what do? Go find another one to work with. You know, that's what we get to do, you know, is to pass on this message for fun and for free. You know, nothing, you know, Dr. Bob talks about, you know, the reasons he does it. And I thought I had the page marked, you know, the reasons I do it. It's a sense of duty. It's paying back to the people that freely passed it on for me. And when I do, I take out insurance for my next drink. You know, I'm taking out insurance when I'm working with another drunk. And it's like, just commonly put, you know, how do... You know, I have health insurance, and I'm 57 years old, you know, and I don't like paying health insurance every month. Nobody does, you know, or automobile insurance, and I pay that insurance every month. I don't want to pay that money. I'd like to spend that money on something else, right? But you know what? If there's a car wreck, doggone it, I'm so glad I had that insurance. And if there's, you know, if there was a health issue, I am sure glad I have that insurance. And I don't know the day I'm going to need the insurance of that drink. I don't know that there's going to, what day that'll be, that life hits us with a thunderbolt that, you know, shakes me to the core. I don't know when I'm going to need that insurance, but I sure as heck need to pay into that every single day of my life. So anyway, that's a short version of step 12. And are we winding up? So I'd like to read something right now. And, you know, the longer we stay sober, the more things we learn down there. I hadn't even heard of this guy, Sam Shoemaker. And Sam Shoemaker was a member of the Oxford Group and the big church in New York, Calvary Church, New York. And he wrote this poem that I love, you know, that what we get to do in the rooms. And it's a little bit long, but I think it describes who I want to be in the rooms and hopefully that we can be. And it's called I Stand at the Door. And I might cry a little bit because it always gets me, but I stand at the door. I neither go too far in nor stay too far out. The door is the most important door in the world. It's the door through which men walk when they find God. There's no use me going way inside and staying there when so many are still outside and they, as much as I, crave to know where the door is. And all that so many ever find is only the wall where the door ought to be. They creep along the wall like blind men with outstretched, groping hands. feeling for a door, knowing there must be a door, yet they never find it. So I stand at the door. The most tremendous thing in the world is for men to find that door, the door to God. The most important thing that any man can do is to take hold of one of those blind, groping hands and put it on the latch that only clicks and opens to the man's own touch. Men die outside the door as starving beggars die on cold nights in cruel cities in the dead of winter, die for want of what is within their grasp. They live on the other side of it, live because they've not found it. Nothing else matters compared to helping them find it and open it and walk in and find him. So I stand by the door. Go in, great saints, go all the way in. Go way down into the cavernous cellars and way up into the spacious attics. It's a vast, roomy house, this house where God is. Go into the deepest of hidden casements of withdrawal, of silence, of sainthood. Some must inhabit these inner rooms and know the depths and heights of God. And call outside to the rest of us how wonderful it is. Sometimes I take a deeper look in, and sometimes I venture in a little farther. But my place seems closer to the opening, so I stand by the door. There's another reason why I stand there. Some people get partway in and become afraid, lest God and the zeal of his house devour them. For God's so very great, and for God is so very great in us, all of us. And these people feel a cosmic claustrophobia and want to get out. Let me out, they cry. And the people way inside only terrify them more. Somebody must be by the door to tell them that they are spoiled. For the old life, they have seen too much. One taste of God and nothing but God will do anymore. Somebody must be watching for the frightened who seek to sneak out just where they came in to tell them how much better it is inside. The people too far in don't see how near these are to leaving, preoccupied with the wonder of it all. Somebody must watch for those who have entered the door but would like to run away. So for them too, I stand by the door. I admire the people who go way in, but I wish they would not forget how it was before they got in. Then they would be able to help the people who've not yet even found the door, or the people who want to run away again from God. You can go in too deeply and stay in too long and forget the people outside the door. As for me, I shall take my old accustomed place, near enough to God to hear him and know he's there, but not so far from men as not to hear them and remember they are there too. Where? Outside the door. Thousands of them, millions of them. But more important for me, one of them, two of them, 10 of them, whose hands I'm intended to put on the latch. So I shall stand by the door and wait for those who seek it. I had rather be a doorkeeper, so I stand by the door.
Thanks very much. Thanks for having us.